Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
From Park Sterling Realty in Bronxville, Westchester Talk Radio presents the February edition of Talking Real Estate with Leah Carroll. This is Jim Cleefield speaking. This show is produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Facelifts Painting, Reverso Associates, Wartburg, Westchester County Office of Economic Development, Duretti Reynolds, Fixed Rate Power, Hightower Advisors Westchester, Skyline Genesis Event Marketing, and Northeast Environmental.
Where it's worth the earth, Jim.
That's right, Mixmaster Matt Cahan. Don't forget, download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. Like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio. And follow us on Instagram. We are at Shark Creative. And now the host of the show, the president of Park Sterling Realty. Here's your host, Leah Carroll.
Thanks, Jim. So excited to be back for our February edition of Talking Real Estate with Leah Carroll. Of course, I'm Leah Carroll, president of Park Sterling Realty. We serve as Putnam, Westchester, and Bronx counties, but we are headquartered on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. So what I first want to do, I suppose, is give you a quick market update, take that 30,000-foot view of what's happening to the real estate market in Westchester County. But before I do, I want to remind everybody that every market is different and every buyer and seller are unique. So though you are going to get some great statistics, advice, trends, tips today that you should not make a move without talking to your realtor first, and if necessary, tax accountant, lawyer, banker, whatever. And with me today will be Phil Robles of Popular Bank, and he's going to be in a really important segment when talking about a competitive buyer's market. And we're also going to be bringing in Tom Bamonte, who's a general contractor, to talk about tips and trends in home remodeling. But before we get to all that, so you might recall in January, we talked about the spring market coming right after Super Bowl. Super Bowl tends to be that kind of timeline that realtors talk about for the spring market. And that was before Super Bowl back in January. And here we are, it's February, and we are 2 weeks or 3 weeks after Super Bowl. And I can absolutely report that I miss football. But more importantly than having time on my hands on a Sunday afternoon lately, what I'm seeing in the marketplace countywide is a really, really low number of properties for sale. You know, this is the time of year when people are getting their properties on, and the spring market should be kind of booming, but inventory is low, really low, historically low. I'm about to give you some numbers, so get ready. Single-family houses for sale in Westchester County right now are at a 10-year low with only about 2,000 houses for sale. Same holds true for condos. Countywide, there are about 300 condos for sale, also a 10-year low. And co-ops are right there, too, a 10-year low with about 200 co-ops for sale countywide. The 2-to-4-family housing market is no different, with fewer than 200 for sale countywide. So, wow, what does that all mean? Well, that means that buyers are having a really tough time securing a property, that they're competing for those properties that they like. We're hearing about highest and best and bidding wars. And we're going to talk to Phil in a minute about what they can do to hopefully, when they find the house that, of their dreams, that they can win it. But for sellers, you know, this could be the year for you. Depending on how long you've been in your home, this could be the right time to sell because inventory is low. There is competition to buy properties and across every segment of the market, as we just talked about. So if you've been thinking about, you know, is this the year to put the house on the market, based on inventory levels, I would say, I think, yeah, it is. Now, I did say depending on how long you've been in your house, because what I should also point out is that though inventory is low, the median sale price for most of these segments of the marketplace is at a nice, slow growth rise. So though the median sale price has been in most markets, been going up, it's not been going up by leaps and bounds. It's a nice slow growth, which is terrific, actually, because that shows a nice stable economy. So getting back to buyers for a moment. So buyers, you know, here it is spring. It's 70 degrees here in beautiful Bronxville. And buyers are out, maybe working with their buyer broker, maybe just hitting it up at an open house. But either way, they're out looking. Inventory's low. They find the house of their dreams. And then they learn five other people want their house. So what can they do to help their odds of getting that house? And, you know, step one what the realtor would be saying to that consumer is, let's talk about your pre-approval. No buyer should be going out there without being armed with the pre-approval. So my very good friend Phil Robles from Popular Bank, who's with us every month, is going to talk to us today now about what does that even mean and what does that look like and how do I do that and how does that help. So, Phil, welcome back. We're thrilled to have you for our second edition.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate the time here with you. And, we're coming into the hot market. Typically, this time of the year is when everyone's coming out from their slumber and starting to look at properties. And, as inventory is low, the spring season is typically when new properties are coming on the market. And so people are getting ready and being pre-approved. However, with the current way, the digital age now of the mortgage industry, you're seeing pre-approvals that are done electronically. And so when something like that happens, you'll tend to see some of these loan officers that are creating these pre-approvals, they're leaning heavily on their systems and just gathering information verbally and issuing a pre-approval. Now, while that's good because it takes into account the credit report, most importantly, in the FICO scores, but it also takes into account a verbal analysis where they're gathering information from a client, but they may not be collecting the loan officer or the bank may not be collecting the W-2s and the pay stubs and the bank statements and the things of that nature to validate that pre-approval and ensure that it's solid. And so when you're dealing with a competitive market, multiple buyers coming to the table, what's very important to a seller is that the buyer that's being brought to the table can execute quickly. And so if you've just done a pre-approval digitally, but you haven't validated it through documentation, it leaves a bit of risk from a performance standpoint on whether or not the buyer can actually close on that pre-approval.
So if I'm a buyer in this heated competitive marketplace and I want to, find a house and bid on it, so should I, what do I have to give documents to the bank, and are they going to charge me to do this process? How does that work?
Yeah, so there's typically not a charge. I mean, there is a cost to doing a pre-approval from the bank's perspective, because a credit report doesn't come for free. But typically, the banks are not charging for the credit report up front or any application fees up front. So you should be able to get your pre-approval at no cost. There's no cost to it. And as far as should you, are you required to provide all that documentation? Technically, no, you're not. You can do it all over the phone and verbal, at least up front. But I highly recommend that you do bring that documentation in. Say you're out in the field, you're looking at properties on a Saturday afternoon, you see something, you need a pre-approval quickly to get that bid in. You can certainly get that done in a couple of hours. But once that's done, the follow-up should be within 3 days of the pre-approval being established, and you should definitely work quickly to get the documentation in, because the stress levels that are associated with a mortgage application for everyone are very high. And by supplying the pay stubs, the W-2s, the bank statements, you're able to remove that factor of, am I really pre-approved? Is this really a good, can I really do this?
And I'm glad you're bringing that up. As a realtor, and when we're a listing agent, when we're representing a seller, and someone brings a buyer to us with an offer and a pre-approval, the first thing we're going to check is we're going to give a call over to that lending institution, and then we're not going to ask questions about how much money does the guy have in his bank account. We may not even ask what his credit score is, but we are going to want to know that the bank has done some sort of vetting process. And it wasn't just a verbal, sure, we'll lend you money, but that, we've seen some tax returns or pay stubs or bank statements, so that we know that buyer is really qualified. So, but in thinking about that pre-approval, that where they have provided you their documents so that we know it's a better odds of this being a qualified buyer than simply a verbal conversation, how long is that pre-approval good for?
So the pre-approval it'll have a couple different expiration dates to it. The most important expiration date that exists is associated with the credit report. A credit report is only good for 120 days from the day it was pulled. And so if you don't close on a mortgage and actually execute on buying a property in 120 days, then that report is going to need to be re-pulled and updated. And so you basically have about 4 months to where that pre-approval is good for. However, the letters will typically expire every 30 to 60 days. And the reason why you'll have those expiration dates on the letters is just so that the bank can reconnect with the buyer and ensure that everything is still the same. They haven't changed jobs. They haven't taken on any new debt. And they're not going to check the credit to see if they take on new debt. They're going to ask. You know, it's a conversation. And so this way they can actually make sure that the pre-approval that is out there can be updated. And you want that as a seller. You want to make sure that the pre-approval that is being presented to you from a potential buyer is going to be up to date and that conversation with the bank is consistent and timely.
For sure, because I know that buyers who were out looking that last fall, who maybe didn't find the house of their dreams yet, who want to come back out and look now, the pre-approval they had back in October, November is not one I want to see them use to present their best offer in a competitive marketplace, because I want to see one that's 30 days old or 60 or less. And I'm going to say to those buyers, hey, I'm really glad you have that pre-approval from that bank. Now go get one updated. Right.
Right. Right. And people will worry about the credit report being constantly pulled. And that's definitely a real concern. But if you're like me, I don't take on new debt often. I'm very careful about, and a lot of people are these days, especially with all the things that have gone on with breaches of the bureaus and so forth, that you will, getting a credit pull for a mortgage application, while it may cause a mild deterioration in FICO, you'll find that if you did not do anything for those 4 months, when they repull again, I've seen that the FICOs don't typically drop when that repull exists. And it's simply because you're not making a habit of constant inquiries. It's only that habit of constantly letting people pull your credit, and especially pulling credit for different reasons, like getting a mortgage application and then an auto loan and then a credit card or a student loan or an unsecured loan. It's really the getting multiple credit pulls from different types of loans. That's what will cause a significant decrease in FICO.
See, and that's good to know, because I do know that out on the street that there is kind of a myth around if I get my credit pulled frequently or to try to get a mortgage, it's going to hurt my credit. And what I'm hearing from you is, you know, once it's for the mortgage process, it's not only essential to be a valid buyer, but that it doesn't hurt nearly as much as people think it does.
No. And the caveat is, as long as you're not someone who's constantly having their credit pulled.
And that's really good to know, because, you know, it's inventory's low, buyers are out, it's a competitive marketplace. So having your ducks in a row is really the thing to do. And having that pre-approval through a bank like Popular is essential. Now, I've been hearing the murmurs, Phil, on the streets about interest rates. They've gone up a little bit already. I'm hearing they're going up more. What can you tell me about that?
So, you know, this is something that I think people have been speculating on for a couple of years now, that rates were going to go up. And, you know, I know the past two summers, you know, it's like the summertime is kind of when I'm paying attention on what we think is going to happen in the next year. And, you know, at the end of the spring boom. And so it seems like the past two summers, we kept hearing next year rates are going to go up, and they didn't. And typically they were going down in the new year. The past 2 years we've seen rates drop. So, but there was this consensus that it was going to go up, and so it's not a big surprise that it did. It's definitely assisted by the how well our economy is doing right now. The stock market's doing well, even though we had that recent correction. That was normal. That was something that is healthy. And so when you have, GDP growing and you have the stock market doing well, jobs are doing well, the natural effect is that interest rates are going to go up. So they have gone up, I would say, about 0.25 to 0.375% across the industry since about second week in December till now, and they're holding steady. We're not seeing a lot of movement in interest rates, which actually is unusual, because in the past couple of years we were seeing rates bouncing up and down by 0.25% to 0.375% on a daily basis. You would see these swings that were happening on a regular basis. They've really holding where they are. And I personally believe that we're going to see them continue to go up. Now, granted, there are things in this world that can take place that can change change that and cause them to come back down or cause them to go back up. And so I wouldn't say they're definitely going up, but the, you know, I feel that, that we're going to see them go up. And I feel like we're probably going to land anywhere from 4.5 to 4.625, somewhere in that neighborhood through the summer. Hopefully we won't go much higher than that, but you know, you never know, we could get as high as 5% before the year is over. And when you look at that on a historical basis, I mean, it really is, it's still really a great interest rate.
Yeah, I mean, five is low in relatively historical look back. You know, my parents, I'm of that generation, my parents bought their house, when I think it was 19% interest. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of shaking their heads at the worry over 5%. But for someone, and you used an expression with me earlier about interest rates and how they move. Can you tell me that?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a saying amongst the you know, the loan officers where we'll say elevator up and stairs down. And so when you see markets begin to move in a way that causes interest rates to rise, you'll see rates just jump right up and quickly rise. And when you see the market movements that will typically cause interest rates to decrease, that decrease happens gradually, and it's like watching it's, you know, the stairs down, you're taking, it's moving down slower than we'd like. I mean, we get frustrated that we see the rates jump up so quick and they don't fall down as quick as they went up.
So. I love that expression. I'm going to use that expression. So in talking about, even if interest rates went as high as 5%, and I know it still sounds low, and to some folks it's you know, real low still. For buyers out there in the marketplace who are competing to buy properties, even a quarter point can mean the difference between being able to buy one house and not buying one house, and their buying power is affected. Can you talk to buyers out there who are saying, you know, well, what would a 0.25% change mean to me financially?
Sure. So when a pre-approval is done, the interest rate that's associated with that pre-approval is established from that day that the credit was pulled and the pre-approval was issued. And so the interest rate is subject to change. And so we can talk about a little bit about, you know, what that means. But for now, if the, say I issue a pre-approval and I issued it at 4.25%, and it takes a buyer a month to find a property or 6 weeks to find a property. Well, if the rate has increased, you know, to say 4.5%, then the payment is different. And if the pre-approval that we put together, if the client is saying, you know, I don't like to take on a lot of debt, I don't have car loans, I don't believe in monthly payments, so I'd like to stretch a little bit on my mortgage, and we're qualifying them to their maximum payment, and then that maximum payment or qualification was based on 4.25, and now we move to 4.5, well, that pre-approval is no longer valid, and that purchase price can change, or at very minimum, the loan amount can change, which means that a buyer would either need to reduce the purchase price that they're going to look, the home they're going to look for, or put a little bit more down, the other, and borrow less, which will offset for the rate. The other thing that they can do, which I've seen a client's doing quite often right now, is changing from a 30-year fixed mortgage and looking at something like a 10-1 ARM, which is a 30-year amortization loan that has an interest rate that's fixed for 10 years. And in exchange for that shorter lock period on the interest rate, they get a lower rate. And so they may be able to make up the difference that they lost because of the market change by taking a 10-1 ARM. And there are other ARM products, but someone who's focused on a 30-year fix, they really will look at a 10-1 ARM because it's the longest fixed period adjustable rate mortgage that most banks offer.
So, and that's good to know. So if a buyer has their pre-approval and an interest rate is on it and they're out looking for that house, when does the rate get locked?
So you're typically going to lock the interest rate when the buyer has the buyer and seller has executed, signed a contract of sale. So and that's a critical point, because you could come to a point where you've negotiated the purchase price. Everyone agrees what they're going to pay, you know, and sell it for. And then the contract is issued. The buyer will sign first. And then something could happen before the seller signs that causes the deal to not move forward. And so that's why you want to wait for the seller to sign so that you're fully, they call it fully executed, both parties have signed, and then at that point you'll lock in the interest rate. However, there's some room for wiggle there, if you will, where one could lock if they felt very confident that the seller was going to buy. And, you know, if you think of the best case scenario where it's family and parents are selling to their children, and we know that both parties are going to execute, then I may look at the timing of it all, figure out when we are targeting a closing date, and lock the interest rate for, say, 90 days instead of 60 days. So that rule of a fully executed contract is a soft rule, but it's a best practice.
So when I get my rate lock, when contracts are executed and I get my rate lock, is my that rate you've now given me is good for how long?
Typically, you're going to lock an interest rate for 60 days. That's typically how long the contracts are looking for the whole process to take, although we can get them closed in as quick as 30 days, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. You typically want to do that 60-day lock. On co-ops, you may want to do a 90-day lock because there's another layer associated with a co-op where you're getting the board approval after the bank is approved. So sometimes you want to leave some room there for the board approval, but typically you're doing 60. Now, each incremental lock period has a different rate. The longer the lock period, the rate deteriorates slightly. So you can do a rate lock as short as 15 days, and so that'll have the most aggressive rate. And then you can do a 30-day, a 60-day, or a 45-day, or a 90. And so depending upon the transaction itself and the speed that we're going to move at, we may decide to take a shorter lock, but industry standard, 60 days.
So if I have a rate lock, and I'm psyched about it, but inexplicably rates go down while I have my rate lock, what happens then?
So there is a policy that exists in a lot of banks that exists, and you definitely want to ask that question to the bank you're working with. Hopefully it's popular. Our policy is that if the rate drops by 0.25% while the process is in place, then we will do a one-time rate renegotiation at no cost, which means we'll reduce that interest rate. The key there is it's a one-time, so you want to be careful about doing it. And me personally, I'm not one to gamble. And so when I see a rate that we can grab that's lower, we just grab it while we can. And a lot of times my experience is when the opportunity comes, it leaves as fast as it arrived. So yeah,
good advice. Yeah. Good advice. So, you know, what I'm hearing is that the Westchester housing market, kind of across all segments, has low inventory, competitive buyers, highest and best, that buyers need to be armed with an up-to-date, well-vetted pre-approval, and that they should be keeping an eye on interest rates, because when they find the house they want to get that rate lock in place because it's likely rates are going up this spring and throughout the summer. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And what I'm seeing or what I've had happen in the past is when you have some of these competitive situations where there's multiple offers and you'll get a cash buyer that comes in and someone who's looking to take financing is competing against the cash buyer, you want to, in those situations, you want to be absolutely sure that you've supplied all your documentation, got the file, brought before an underwriter. The underwriter signs off on it, and then you can put yourself in a position where if your attorney agrees and the bank is confident that from an income and asset and credit perspective, you qualify, you may be able to remove your mortgage contingency from the contract. And in doing that, you have a quasi cash buyer look and may be able to compete against cash buyers.
And that's a good point. And I'm sure buyers, you know, out there who are thinking that sounds great should definitely be talking to their attorney and be talking to their bank before they make that decision. But yeah, that's just another, you know, way to be competitive in this marketplace. So I guess the takeaway from all this is, first of all, let me talk to you sellers out there, you prospective sellers. Inventory's down, economics 101, think back, supply and demand. It's a great time to be a seller. So what are you waiting for? And to the buyers out there who really want to buy, it's a great time to do that because interest rates are creeping up. And, you know, yes, it's a little tough to find the house of your dreams and not have six other people want it. But if you can put it together, it's a great time to buy and sell. And you know what? When people buy and sell real estate, it's good for the economy. People buy houses, people buy cars, people buy furniture. They hire landscapers and they hire contractors. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Tom Bomani about what's happening in the general contracting world. So, Phil, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk to you next month and we'll be...
At Indian Point, we've helped power Westchester and New York City for about four decades. Recently, as part of an agreement with New York State, we are working toward an early and orderly shutdown of the facility by 2021. Until then, we'll continue safely generating about 25% of the reliable, round-the-clock electricity that powers the city and Westchester, all with virtually no greenhouse gas emissions. Safety is, as it always has been, the top priority for everyone at the plant. We will continue to keep Indian Point fully staffed, and full-time inspectors from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission will monitor our daily operations. We'll also continue to play an important role in our community as a taxpayer and active participant in local charities. Indian Point Energy Center is still working for you, and it's our honor to continue to serve the people of New York. If you have questions about our ongoing operations, please visit safesecurevital.com.
We're back. Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
So I'm in a competitive marketplace we were talking about earlier. Inventory is low. Buyers are out buying because interest rates are going up. So they want to get into their house. And I have a solid pre-approval from your bank. And now I'm ready to buy, but I'm literally spending, you know, all my money to buy this house. And I want to do a kitchen or I want to do a bath or I want to do some home improvements. You know, where is that money going to come from? Can you help me out?
Sure. So I would say there's three main avenues that you'll seek financing. You'll have unsecured. I believe even the contractor-based financing is secured. They're putting a lien on the property. So those come at probably the highest cost of all of them. They're high interest rate loans. But then you'll have construction loan that's done or renovation loan that's done as a mortgage where they will if there's a mortgage on the property that exists, they will pay that mortgage off. Let's just say you owe $200,000 on your home. You need $100,000 to do renovation. So you're going to take a new loan for $300,000 plus closing costs and pay off the old loan and have a new loan. Now, that's a construction loan. Those come in FHA-style loans, which you'll hear the word 203K thrown out there quite a bit. That's a government loan, and, you know, there's mortgage insurance associated with that type of loan no matter what your leverage is on the home. So, you know, you'll hear that you need mortgage insurance if you borrow more than 80%. Well, if you take an FHA 203K loan and you owe 20% on your home, you're still going to pay that mortgage insurance. I'm not a big fan of that. So then there are a lot of community banks out there, some of the major banks out there that will have conventional construction loans, and those do not have mortgage insurance if the loan-to-value, if the leverage is less than 80% of the value. And on those loans, they're a little less expensive than the FHA loan, but both of those loans will require that the funding for the construction is delivered to the contractor in phases, in bits. And so contractors may not be a big fan of that because of the phases that exist, and it could possibly slow the process down. I think you could speak to that on whether or not you've encountered.
We just did one about a year and a half ago, and it was more seamless, I should say, than I thought it was going to be, It went pretty smoothly. It really did. It really helped the homeowner out. And the inspection process is kind of a twofold because the bank sends a third party out to see how much of the work was done. And then he has to sign off and I have to sign off on something. So it did work out well. I was somewhat surprised.
And so when you're doing those kind of loans, you'll see that those phases exist and, you know, there are good cases. And then sometimes it could get a little frustrating if that process of doing the inspections doesn't move as quickly as one would like. And so the third option, which is my favorite option, is to do like a home equity loan, a line of credit. And you're only paying on the amount that you use. So as you're making payments to the contractor, then you're paying interest on that amount, which helps from a monthly payment standpoint. But then it removes that third-party inspection process and allows a bit more negotiating power, I think, from an owner's perspective, where they are able to act as if they're paying cash, even though they're using the line of credit, because in essence, they're cutting checks directly to the contractor.
So Phil, and I think that's great information. So if I find the house I want to buy in the spring market and I have my pre-approval for the purchase price, am I getting the home equity line of credit after closing, or am I doing that at the time I'm purchasing the house?
You're typically doing it afterwards. There was a time when you would do lines of credit simultaneous and do a simultaneous close. While those do exist out there, typically the first position lender, the major bank that's doing the purchase loan, they usually have restrictions against that. But there are no restrictions once you've closed and taken ownership. So I would say 99% of the time you're going to get that line of credit on a post-purchase closing basis.
So that's great to know. And I've heard, and I'm not a tax professional, but I have heard that home equity lines of credit are no longer deductible as part of the new tax plan. And so you know, and I actually were talking earlier about this, and you had a great solution. Asterisk, public service announcement, everybody's different, check with your tax accountant. But I thought this was a real good solution for that problem.
Yeah, so what you can do is do the mortgage, do the first mortgage, and then get the line of credit, go through the process of doing the renovation, and then once the renovation is complete, you now should have a little bit of a different value, so you should value a little higher than when you purchased it. And then what you'll do is do a refinance to then consolidate the mortgage and the home equity line into one loan. And as long as that loan amount is, or up to $750,000 of that mortgage or less, is taxed, the mortgage interest is tax deductible. And according to what I've read, the home equity lines of credit are no longer, at least ones that are originated now, are no longer tax deductible.
Great, exactly. So you know, it makes me feel a little better knowing that buyers out there who are competing for these houses, who may be spending, you know, all their money, so to speak, on the purchase of the house, can still get a renovation done and still have a great kitchen and great bathrooms and central air and all the deck and all the things they want to have. Let's talk. I'm going to go back to Tom for a second. You know, you mentioned, Phil, that you get a house, you put in a project, and you're hoping that your house has just appreciated in value. So I want to touch on that. You know what? We're going to take a break, and then I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about what we in the real estate industry called seller math.
When considering a building or renovation project, you need someone on your side. An experienced and knowledgeable company with expertise in planning, budgeting, organization, and control. Whether the project is a house, a school, a retail location, or an office building, you need Reverso Associates on your side. They're focused on two things: to provide or assist in the management of building programs from the earliest planning through occupancy, and to provide a flexible, experienced management consulting capability specializing in the needs of the construction industry. With a staff of architects, engineers, construction managers, estimators, construction accountants, schedulers, draftsmen, and other specialists, and with experience from over 1,000 projects, Reverso Associates can meet your needs effectively. When deciding on any type of construction project, or if a project is heading in the wrong direction, you need the expertise and experience of Reverso Associates on your side. Call for a consultation, 914-723-3474, or visit reversoassociates.com. Reverso Associates, a team of experts to get the job done.
We're back.
Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Welcome back to Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. This is Jim Cleefield speaking. This portion of the show, produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Facelifts Painting, Reverso Associates, Wartburg, Westchester County Office of Economic Development, Durante Reynolds, Fixed Rate Power, Hightower Advisors Westchester, Skyline Genesis Event Marketing, and Northeast Environmental. Don't forget to download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. Like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio and follow us on Instagram at Shark Creative. And now, once again, here's your host, Leah Caro.
Thanks, Jim. You're talking real estate with Leah Caro. I'm Leah Caro, president of Park Sterling Realty, servicing Westchester, Putnam, and the Bronx, but headquartered on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. We've been talking with Tom Bamonte, licensed general contractor, as well as a licensed real estate associate broker here at Park Sterling Realty. So he's wearing two hats and has a unique perspective that he can bring to the table. And right before we went to break, we started to talk about, you know, an expression we use sometimes is in the industry is seller math. And what seller math means is that seller or owner bought the house for X dollars and has invested in projects and renovations, Y dollars, and ergo, when it's time to sell, must net Z dollars. You know, so they take the price of the house, they add all their improvements on, and then they figure that's what I'm going to get back. And you know, I want to talk to Tom a little bit about return on investment, and how does that work, and you know, where do you see the best return on investment, and should anyone expect to get dollar for dollar returns?
Well, when it comes to return, I guess the best return is doing a kitchen. I think you get about 87% back on a kitchen. Bathrooms are the next thing in line. Also, a very good paint job is worth the money. Do it right from the beginning. A lot of people are reluctant. You know, they'll call their uncle in to help them paint, and you know, you end up in 2 or 3 years with not so nice walls. And so spend the money there. And windows are another issue because that brings in the energy efficiency of the house for both heating and air conditioning. So those are good areas to put your money into.
Yeah, you know, and that's, and you're reminding me when you're talking about painting, painting is probably one of those projects where you get your money back. But, you know, and I think of the painting parties of my youth where I had my friends over and I'd pay them in pizza and beer. But painting really isn't so much an improvement as is something we want to see sellers do so that it makes the product they're looking to sell more attractive, not just a better house, but a more attractive house. And it comes really down to attractive, as you said earlier, you don't get a second chance to make that first impression.
Right, right.
Like, so you could have the best appliances in the kitchen and a terrible paint job, and it still won't look good.
Right, right, exactly.
So we're going to invest in painting. You know, I'm reminded that the National Association of Realtors every year puts out something in coordination with Renovation Magazine called the Cost Versus Value Report. And you can go online, and if you Google Cost V Value Report, you should be able to find it. And it allows you to, by region of the United States, drill down on what the anticipated percentage return is for some projects that we do in our homes. Big projects, little projects, additions, renovating a kitchen to a certain degree, renovating it to a lesser degree. And none of them, my recollection is that none of them are 100%. And
no.
I'm not including painting in this. I'm talking about real renovations or additions.
No, you're 100% right. You're never going to get 100% back. You really, really aren't. But you're going to make your house look better and sell faster.
Right. And, you know, and that's important, too. There's, for everybody who's listening, if you can picture two single dollar bills, and one of them is crisp and green and straight out of, you know, it's not a wrinkle in it, straight out of the ATM. And the other dollar bill is all crumpled and dirty, and you picked it up off the street. Now, they're both worth a dollar, but one's certainly better looking than the other. So if you approach someone on the street with those $2 and said, hey, well, what do you give me for these dollars? I think no one's going to give you more than a dollar for your dollar.
Exactly.
But and if you said, well, which one would you want first? I think every single person would pick the nice, clean dollar.
Absolutely.
Isn't that right? So really, painting and some other kind of first impression projects are not necessarily to increase the value of the house, but I guess are to make that crisp dollar.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And when it comes to putting your house on the market, and I think that's what you're talking about.
It is.
Okay. As a realtor, the other hat that I have, you'll walk through the house with the homeowners and suggest certain things, decluttering and things like that. But as far as putting money in, it's sprucing up really more than anything else. If they had done that kitchen and they want to put it right on, as we said before, it's a little bit too late.
Right. So how, let's talk baths for a second. We've talked a lot about kitchens. More and more I'm finding people, you know, we're busy. Everybody's busy. And very few people, at least people I talk to, are taking baths. Everybody's taking a shower. They're jumping in. They're getting their day together, you know, and they're in and out. Mm-hmm. When renovating a bathroom, are you finding that people are taking tubs out in lieu of showers? Or would you have an opinion on whether that's a smart move long term, or if it's for the user or not the resale?
Well, from the real estate standpoint, you know, Leah, we always recommend that people, you know, asking us that question, I don't want to remove the bathtub because I only have one left in the house, and we really all take showers. But nowadays, more and more people are removing the bathtubs, putting in the nice showers. In fact, I've done a couple of them in one bedroom, one bath co-ops, where people are older. And they want to remain there, and they don't want to climb over the tub. And we've taken them out. And I think it doesn't affect the price at all. It may open it up more to the aging population.
You know, and aging in place is something we think about a lot, where we're seeing people stay in their homes longer, which is nice. And so some of the accommodations that they're doing for themselves, for their lifestyle, for their use, Are those changes translating to the next owner? Well, is that, do you see any problems there? Or is that working pretty smoothly?
I think that's working pretty smoothly. I really do, because it's really not affecting. I mean, if we were talking like this 20, 30 years ago, yeah, there would be an effect, but I don't think it is anymore.
Okay, good to know. So I also want to talk to Tom in a minute about some of the really cool things that are out there that people are doing for renovations, some of those kind of wish list, bucket list projects. And so we're going to take just a quick break. You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio. This is Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. We'll be right back.
Here's a question for you. Do you love your office? I mean, really love your office?
Westchester Talk Radio loves your office too.
So much so, we've got some great stuff for your office.
Of course, we mean your coworkers.
I believe you have my stapler.
Spread the love throughout your office with a fresh floral arrangement from Joseph Richard Florals in Armonk and Grey Rock Florist in Valhalla. A box of heavenly chocolates from Chocolations in Mamaroneck. A social media consultation from MSM Designs. And a happy hour party at Saltaire Oyster Bar and Fish House in Portchester.
And here's the kicker.
And when you enter your office to win, you'll be qualified for a special prize. A visit from Westchester Talk Radio.
And we'll broadcast right from your office.
Try and get some work done then.
Woo-hoo! Love your office?
Show the love and enter to win right now at WestchesterTalkRadio.com.
Produced by Shark Creative. Made possible by your friends at Entergy. Safe, secure, vital.
We're back.
Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Hey there, you're listening to Westchester Talk Radio, and this is Talking Real Estate with Leah Caro. I'm Leah Caro, president of Park Sterling Realty, servicing Putnam, Westchester, and Bronx counties, but headquartered on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. Today is our second show on Westchester Talk Radio. We've had a great show. We've had Phil Robles from Popular Bank joining us, talking about the spring financing climate, and we have Tom Bamonte, licensed general contractor and licensed real estate associate broker, who's been helping us out with talking about renovations for homeowners, home buyers, home sellers, and what's big and popular, and where's the money best spent. And when right before we went to that last break, I said, I want to talk about like these big, cool, awesome projects that people are doing in their houses. And I think we can all agree that it's, you know, the big thing is the home theaters and the man caves, and just really making a basement into something far more than where you used to have the fridge for the beer and all the Christmas decorations. So, Tom, let's talk about those.
Yes. Well, you know, the home theaters are becoming more popular. As you know, the TVs are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And people, you know, would want to stay at home. And with the advent of streaming Amazon and all the rest of them, Netflix, they'd rather sit home and watch these movies and these segments. So as far as the home theater, it used to be, you know, the playground, like you said, for the kid on a rainy day and his friends and everything. And as they progress and get older, they're leaving the house, and the parents are saying, you know, let me do that man cave. Let me put that theater in and let's enjoy it. So it's setting up with the big screen, getting an audio person in, and really doing it up with the proper seating, comfortable seating. And it's really, I think, moving ahead in that direction. You hear that theaters are closing. There's not that many people out at the theaters anymore. And I personally like to watch TV at home and these things on the big screen. I hate to hear someone next to me in the theater eating popcorn, if you know what I mean.
So. I do. You know, I was in a house yesterday that had a media room and a screening room in their basement. And it was a ginormous TV screen. And it was several rows of really comfortable kind of couches that you could then, of course, recline back into.
Right, right.
And then further down on the other side of the room was a wet bar, mm-hmm. A wine refrigerator, a popcorn maker. It was, you know, it was like a built-in concession stand.
Oh, absolutely.
In the basement.
Absolutely, yes.
And I thought, man, this is a great place, you know, to hang out with your family. We're alone, and you watch, catch up on your streaming, and watch the newest releases.
Right, you binge on all of those things from, Amazon, all the episodes, and the Homeland, and all that other stuff. You know.
And I know a certain teenager who would love to play video
I'm sure.
games on a screen that big.
Yes.
So I thought, so is that a tremendous undertaking, putting something like that together?
Well, it depends upon the size of the basement and the overall condition of the basement. You know, you have to put the infrastructure in, and then get your walls up. And most people will put the carpeting down for sound deadening purposes. But it just depends upon the size, really, on the size of the basement.
When you talked about getting the infrastructure in, what do you mean by infrastructure?
Well, all the wiring and the speakers and all that stuff, you know, all that has to be built in to really have the true effect of being in a theater.
Do I need to worry about water?
Well, anything below grade, you always have to worry about water. So there's one that we did where we put down a nice porcelain tile, and then they put these area rugs over it. So if there was an issue with that, they could just remove the rug, and they still have a finished floor.
So if I have a basement that, you know, it doesn't flood.
But it gets damp.
It gets damp.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, should I be taking any precautions? What do you recommend as a general contractor for basements in general to stay dry?
Dehumidifiers. They do have a wave home solution which keeps air constantly circulating through your basement. And the combination of those two, plus if you're going to start from scratch and you know that your basement is subject to maybe those one or two heavy rains that you get in 3 or 4 years or 10 years, put the French drains in. Put that infrastructure in. Make sure you're protecting all of your valuables that you're going to put into that basement.
And a sump pump?
If a sump pump is necessary, yes. Yes, yes. That's something that you can put in there. I know buyers are afraid of sump pumps when they walk in and they, there must be flooding here. But, you know, I look at them as a precautionary measure.
Yeah, and that's true, and I think you're right. Do I need a specialist to do this AV stuff for me?
I always use one, yes. They know exactly the size of the speakers and everything that's needed for that size room.
Excellent. So, quickly, top three movies you would watch in your man cave.
Well, I love the old movies. I do. And Deer Hunter is one of my favorite movies.
Excellent.
That's one of them. There's a few I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Sorry,
right now.
Sorry, put you on the spot.
But
like that.
But the other thing I want to bring up to you is that the other thing that's growing in great popularity is outdoor kitchens. Really, outdoor kitchens are growing very rapidly now.
I'm so glad you brought those up. I was just at the boat show at the Javits Center, you know, which is having my midlife crisis. And they had an outdoor kitchen vendor at the boat show.
Yes.
Because, you know, very lifestyle.
I was up in Boston this weekend. They had the same one.
And yep. So I thought, Man, that is a real luxury.
Mm-hmm.
What does that entail?
Well, you're going to have a built-in type of grill with that, an under-the-counter refrigerator, and some storage area. Obviously, you're using the stones on the countertop because it's impervious to the weather and everything. And they're using smokers, not the stuff you smoke, but, you know, the smokers to smoke the meat and the fish and everything. And they're very popular, too. It's really outdoor entertainment. You know, people are entertaining a lot at home now. And I think that kind of completes the whole thing.
It's a staycation.
Staycation.
You hear that term used a lot,
yes,
a staycation.
Yes, yes.
So can I use it year-round if I live in the Northeast?
Well, it's a little bit more challenging. I guess from May until October, you're good in the Northeast. Obviously, these things are much more popular in California, where the weather is advantageous all year-round.
Do I need to have them winterized if I'm going to not use them, or can I just kind of close them up and walk away?
Yeah, because there will be a sink in the countertop, and they're easily set up so they could be drained and winterized very easily.
Yeah, every time I see one at a house, I always think that is a real, it's a beautiful luxury item, and it really just lends itself to having a home and a backyard or a back area that is just where people want to be.
Right. Well, growing up, you know, we all grew up in that era where we had summer kitchens basically in the basements, and you had the swinging door going out to the yard. Well, now you have the theater inside and the man cave, and you have the outdoor kitchen.
Excellent. Thank you so much. All right, we'll be right back.
An independent lifestyle with a little less work and a little less worry. It's what you want, right? Wartburg offers independent and assisted living, along with specialized memory care for those with Alzheimer's or dementia. From adult daycare and home care to inpatient and outpatient rehab, shorter long-term care, and much more, the services Wartburg offers are all backed by our 150-year reputation of providing quality care to seniors. Call to learn more, 914-699-0800, or visit wartburg.org. Wartburg, named one of the best nursing homes in New York State in 2017 by U.S. News & World Report.
You'd probably rather use that extra cash for that bathroom remodel, but the contaminated soil around your oil tank needs attention. Northeast Environmental is Westchester's premier provider for underground storage tank removals and environmental services. Call Northeast Environmental, 777-1930, and take care of your dirt.
We're back.
Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Hey there, you're listening to Westchester Talk Radio. This is Talkin' Real Estate with Leah Caro. I'm Leah Caro. I'm the president of Park Sterling Realty. We are headquartered on Park Place in beautiful Bronxville Village. We serve Westchester, Putnam, and the Bronx. So we've been talking today about the spring market and what homeowners are doing to get ready for selling and what buyers are doing to get ready for buying. And we've been looking at it from a 30,000-foot view of the inventory in the county, which is low. Inventory is low. So sellers, if you're thinking about it, the time is now. We've been talking about how interest rates are edging up, and probably will do that through the summer. So buyers, if you're thinking of buying, do it now. And we were talking about how when buyers buy and sellers sell, it's good for the economy, partly because when people buy and sellers sell, they do renovations, home renovations. And so with me has been Tom Bamonte. He is wears two hats. And he is a licensed general contractor. And then hat number two is that he is a licensed associate broker here at Park Sterling Realty. So he has the uncanny ability to see and talk to buyers and sellers and people who are looking to do renovations and where they're getting their returns. Where the money is best spent. We were just talking about how the sellers or people looking, or homeowners looking to do renovations, it would be worth their while to go online and take a look at the cost versus value report, which is a document set put out with Renovation Magazine and the National Association of Realtors every year, which examines home improvement projects regionally throughout the United States and what the anticipated return on investment is. And so Tom has been invaluable in telling us about the process of doing, you know, for example, a kitchen renovation and, you know, what you can expect to spend and what you can expect to get back. But, you know, Tom, right now I want to talk about the top five, what you see as a, not just a general contractor, but as a realtor, the top five trends or new things or, you know, what's hot in kitchen renovations today.
Okay, well, I think we touched upon it before, but let's review it. Quartz countertops, and they have been around a few years, but it becoming more popular.
And why is that?
Well, because they're very impervious to staining and easy maintenance. And that's what people are looking for, easy maintenance.
Does it matter what color people are looking at? Is there any color trends you can report?
No, the color really is dictated by the homeowner's taste and the color of the cabinets. And if you're working with a kitchen designer, they will pull it all together with you. You know, usually you end up with about three choices of the countertops before you make your final decision.
So number one top trend would be quartz counters.
Right.
Okay, what else you got?
Counter depth refrigerators. Companies now are really getting into the counter-depth refrigerators.
Can you tell me a little bit? Can you describe for all of us what does that mean?
That means the overall refrigerator is no more than 24 inches deep, maybe another inch or two out from the counter for the door. But it kind of fits in the whole streamline of the kitchen, and it doesn't, you know, those old big refrigerators that stuck out and, you know, everybody tried to hide them in the corner, and well, you don't have to do that anymore. It's more wide than it is deep, and it gives you a different approach. And they're more popular. So most of your appliance companies, and I have to tell you that appliances are changing so rapidly. It's probably every 6 months they're coming out with some new feature.
Right. So quartz counters, counter depth refrigerators.
Right. And wall ovens are popular. Now, wall ovens are not for everyone because they take up a lot of space in the kitchen. So if you have a small space, you're not going to be able to fit them in. That's why everyone goes with a freestanding range. But if you can, wall ovens are a great way to go. They're at kind of eye level. And with the new features of French doors and hinge doors left or right, depending upon your kitchen design, It gets away from that drop door in front of you trying to get that big turkey out on Thanksgiving. So the access to the oven is much, much better.
You know, you read my mind as I'm picturing getting the turkey out of the oven on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like you're right up against it, so it's so easy. The other way, you're always kind of wrestling with that door in front of you.
Absolutely. So quartz counters, counter depth refrigerators, wall ovens with different access points. And what else?
And people are putting in wine coolers. Wine is very popular, and that has to be laid out by your kitchen designer. And we have been putting in some ice makers. Now, a lot of refrigerators do come with ice makers, but some people just want that ability to walk over to the ice machine, open it up, scoop their glass in, and get as much ice as they want.
So when you say ice maker, you're not talking about that thing where I think we're all used to in the front of the fridge where you stick your cup and the ice pops out. You're talking about a freestanding appliance.
Right. They still exist, but refrigerators have come a long way. Some of them have TVs on and they're Wi-Fi connected. You can go on on your iPhone and you're 1,000 miles away and you can see if your refrigerator is up to temperature. You know, that's what's going on. It's all very tech.
Right. So we're talking top five trends in real estate, kitchen renovations. So we've got quartz counters, counter depth refrigerators, wall ovens with different access angles, wine coolers, and ice makers. And tell me about this last item again. We talked about it earlier, but I want to hear about it one more time.
Oh, the induction cooktop. Yeah. Induction cooktops are, they've been around for a long time, as I said before. But now they're making a little bit of a comeback. You do have to have certain cookware to use them, but they kind of cool down instantly. So the old-fashioned flat glass-top electric stove, you know, you always had you shut it off and you always had the little red light to warn you that, you know, that burner's going to be hot for a while. Well, that's not an issue anymore.
So they sound really safe.
Right.
So tell me, because, you know, I'm a realtor, I'm not an engineer.
Right.
So it's a special type of cooktop, but you were talking about you need different cookware? I don't get it.
Right.
How does that work?
And the way it works is, let me just simplify it for everyone. If a magnet can stick to your pots, you can use that pot on the induction range. But all these induction ranges have a little test feature in them where you put water in the pot and you put the pot on, and if it's not applicable to using it, it'll tell you. So there is another cost factor of buying additional cookware to use on that range.
So I don't need to go to, you know, to the store and say I'm looking for induction cookware. I just can say I'm looking. Is that what I do? Is I'm going to the store to ask for induction cookware?
Yeah, yeah, cookware, pots that are used in induction range. Because a pot that you buy for an induction range, you can also use on a regular gas stove or regular electric range as well. Okay.
Okay, and I can go home, like, I can go home later and test my pots by sticking magnets on them.
Right, right, but don't do that in front of your husband.
No, but you know what also is I don't think I have any magnets anymore because, you know, my stainless steel refrigerator doesn't allow me to hang any of my kids' artwork on it.
Well, until, you didn't buy the right one?
But yeah, I just learned today from Tom that I could have had a stainless steel refrigerator this whole time that took magnets. Remind me about that.
Well, yes, certain manufacturers will... make the stainless refrigerator with the magnetic face on it. And the other stainless finish that's coming out now is the dark stainless. It's the black stainless. And it's I kind of like it. It kind of flows. It doesn't show the fingerprints either, which is another issue with stainless.
Absolutely. And if you're like my house, if you have someone whose artwork you can hang on the fridge, chances are you have fingerprints.
The other thing I want to also talk about is the reason why people should go with one manufacturer of appliances, because you want to match all the stainlesses. You know, the stainless finish between GE and Maytag may be different. So some people say, oh, I have to have a Bosch dishwasher, or I need a Wolf range, and I need a Sub-Zero refrigerator. Well, I know Wolf and Sub-Zero are the same company now, but it's those finishes of the stainless that are slightly off. And some people are really into that. They want that to be seamless. And I can understand that. So that's why if you're looking around for particular features, make sure the appliance company that you're going with has all those features in all the different appliances, meaning microwave, wall oven, a freestanding range dishwasher.
Ice maker, cooler.
Yeah, right, right.
Wall oven, everything we've just talked about. Mm-hmm. Do they make... stainless, they make stainless in everything. Is that correct?
Right.
What about cabinets? I mean, I know that's like a weird question.
That's a higher end look. It's a slick look, a lot of these higher end slick look designs usually come from Europe, the European design, the Italians. You know, they're into that look, very very futuristic in a way, but yeah. A lot of people don't like the real shiny cabinets because of the fingerprints.
Right. So let's stay on the topic of cabinets. If someone's got older cabinets, or maybe they just don't like the style anymore, they got it in kind of a light wood and that's not really in, you know, am I ripping them off the wall and starting from scratch? How do I address the cabinet question?
Well, a lot of people say they buy a house and the cabinets are old and the previous owner put... maybe 3 years before they sold the house, they put quartz countertop in or granite countertops. And they'll say, well, I'll paint the cabinets because I don't want to rip everything out. But you may find painting the cabinets is going to cost you more than replacing the cabinets, because cabinets are a broad range of prices right now. And you can get a lot of the bells and whistles on the lower end of the cabinets, even with plywood boxes and everything now. So it has opened itself up to a wide range, and people are, like I said, spending less on cabinets and more on the other bells and whistles.
Can I just get? I think the term is refacing. Is that a good project?
It is, but refacing is limiting.
Can you describe for everybody what I'm talking about?
These companies come in and they take the doors off and they match it up with a door which is called a foil wrap door, and it kind of is a mock version. It's probably more popular in the 80s, that type of design. And then they put a formica, matching color formica, over the face of the cabinets. And, you know, it does it look better? Yes, it does. But I think it still looks dated. It's a fresher look, but it's not a newer look. Let's put it that way.
Now, you said a word that just got me thinking, formica. Oh, you know, formica was what everybody had formica at one point, and then then it became a bad word. Mm-hmm. Did I hear correctly that kind of formica's back?
Well, I wouldn't say it's back. The companies that make Formica have come up with these very higher-end Formicas that almost mimic granites and stone. And, you know, I think that's a great way to put a kitchen in your basement, you know, where you want to put a kitchen down there or a sink area where you're going to put your home theater or your man cave. And you don't want to go for stone down there. You know, maybe that's another way to save a few bucks.
So that's come a long way then.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we were thinking about, you know, things that look better than they used to, like Formica, or things that appear richer than they are, maybe some different counter variety or cabinet varieties you were talking about. Let's talk about flooring, because I know flooring is always a tough one for folks when they're redoing their kitchens. Can you talk to me briefly about, you know, what's a good option for flooring?
There are tile floors out there which are porcelain, and they actually look a lot like wood. So people who really want a porcelain floor, a solid surface floor like a stone tile, these porcelain tiles are great. And you can get them looking like a wood floor. It's not going to be 100%, but it gives you that look, and the serviceability of them is great.
Well, you've given us some great tips. We're going to go take a break, and when we get back, we're going to talk some more about home renovations and the real estate market.
Shark Creative.
Thank you, listener. Yes, Shark Creative is the company you think of for on-hold messages. If you want to hear how it helps, you can call Mercedes-Benz of New Rochelle, Durante Rentals, Michael Labriola, Inc., Oak Ridge Staffing, Emma's Ale House, Northeast Environmental, or just go to sharkcreative.com and listen there. Meanwhile, we've expanded our services as your all-audio resource. On-hold messages, of course, production and placement of radio campaigns on the Pete and others too. And now we also have our very own internet radio station, Westchester Talk Radio. Look for us on Facebook at Westchester Talk. Have us come out to your next event, help you capture audio from your sponsors, associates, friends. Bite into that first impression with Shark Creative. Everything audio. It just sounds better.
Shark.